direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James. You have a little over 2 hours to spend together tonight. If it's on your mind, well, I'll make sure it's on mine, providing it has no import whatsoever. Though, I thought it was important. I was glad to see Edmonton win. I know that's fighting words for some people, but I'm rooting for that, so we'll see. Now tied up. All right, so we'll cast that aside for the moment and talk about, like I say, whatever's on your mind. And last night, I promised Dave that I would play Surfing USA, and I spaced it, so he'll hear that tonight, as well as your other requests. So I saw this online and immediately had to laugh. 45% of Americans commenting on social media say that social media has unrealistic cleaning standards. Now, of course, why I had to laugh is that I spend a lot of time online, particularly looking for things to talk to you about and all that. I can't think of an instance where anybody's cleaning standard was the topic of discussion, so clearly I'm going to the wrong sites. Yeah, so unrealistic cleaning. And so we have a survey from American Home Shield, and they surveyed 1,000 Americans across the U.S. on their preferences for housework and chores and their relationship to home-related social media. And they picked people from 18 to 75. The average age was right around 40, and 50% were men and 49% were women, which makes you wonder, what's the other 1%? Non-binary. For a while there, I thought they were interviewing the household pets. More than half identified as property owners, and 35% reported their primary occupation was, quote-unquote, homemaker. In that case, you'd expect they're doing chores. But nonetheless, I found it fascinating that they feel that they're shamed by social media. And again, I don't know what sites these are, but it doesn't come up in my world. But they all, as a group, felt they spent a quote-unquote decent amount of time cleaning their homes. On average, 7.5 hours a week, so a little over an hour daily. 41% say they're cleaning a bit every day, 46% opt to clean a few times a week, and 1 in 10 clean just once a week. 2 in 5 don't have a set of regimented schedules. All right, so what's hated? All right, with that in mind, they did a list of what chore is it that you hate the most. Number one was not a surprise at all. Scrubbing toilets. Yeah, I'm with you. But number two was laundry. Now, I admit the dryer can be an implement of destruction, and I know the iron is, but even so, I don't find laundry to be that problematic, at least not to come into the solid number two on hated chores. Washing dishes was number three. I don't tend to mind that either. Now, interestingly, scrubbing the shower or the bathtub came after that. I don't know. And 11% most hated mopping floors. Now, in terms of the psychology of this, 35% say that clutter is a sign of weakness. Now, to me, I thought clutter was a sign you needed a bigger apartment or house. 36% say they're lazy when it comes to chores. And here's the part. 48% think some people keep their homes too clean. How is that even possible? All right, so we'll talk more about who they are and what they hate and what they like and things of that nature. We'll also get to Eduardo in Tampa. There's room for you as well. We've got 2 hours to spend together coming up right here. So 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Mm-hmm.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Henry Mancini, the Pink Panther theme, and that was James's Request, 1964 on RCA, and happy to play it. We'll get to several more of his and hopefully yours, and I promised I'd play YMO for Naoto, and if you haven't heard that, that's a lot of fun. So all that's coming up. But we were talking about how people hate doing housework. And I guess that's not really surprising, but some of the things they hate was of interest. But the other thing, when I say fighting words, it's great. For married spouses, they ask you or your spouse, which one does more housework? Both of them, both sexes said, me. All right. So interestingly, the way they viewed that. Now, 36% did self-identify as being lazy about chores. But the interesting thing also among husbands and wives is 44% say they have a higher standard of cleanliness than their spouse. 36% said they had the same standards. Now, interestingly, of course, of that 44%, almost all of them were the wives. Twice as many women as men noted they had higher cleaning standards. And you know what? I think it is, more than anything, is that you kind of tolerate your own messes, but you don't tolerate at all your spouse's mess, so therefore they must be dirtier, I think. I'm not 100% sure, but it's certainly interesting to see, as I was saying, if you didn't join us last hour, that it's social media that is putting pressure on these people. And again, I must visit the wrong sites, because I did not realize that 60% of the respondents said it was social media comments about cleaning and housework and chores that affected them greatly. 65% of the women, 51% of the men all said that keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak, the cleanliness of social media is affecting them. Oh man, get a life! But nonetheless, it's interesting that 58% admitted to consuming social media specifically about cleaning or chores. All right, I've lived a long time. It's never occurred to me. I think I'll look up how other people are cleaning. Just does not get to me. But apparently, to the majority of people in the survey, again, 1,000 people, and they ranged in age from teenager to senior citizen. So everything. As far as what they were looking for online, 84% wanted tips. Then 51% wanted transformation videos. And I was like, what is that? All right, you know, you've got that stain on the rug, the dirty rug. How do you transform it? Yeah, we used to call that cleaning, but nonetheless, 51%. Cleaning tutorials, 49% are looking for that. All right, process videos. 34% of the people were looking for how to restock their refrigerator. Just shove it in there. All right. Really, how high is this? And then 24% went online for educational tips, like why cleaning the dryer vent is important. I mean, if you don't want to meet the whole fire department. So that is the latest in surveys. But I know that social media is affecting how people view themselves. Unfortunately, it never occurred to me that there apparently is a big thing about how they view their own homes. Yeah, well, no matter what your castle, keep it as clean as you want. All right, that's not to say you have a license to hoard, but in general, if this is your biggest worry, life must be great. Eduardo in Tampa, welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, good evening, Raleigh. Well, I'm glad you're on, because way too many news. It must be like a full moon or something, all this news is on today.
Well, yes. I don't know what to say. There's an awful lot going on, and we won't talk about any of it.
Of course. But, you know, I got one habit about talking about housework. Yeah. This might be related. Is I got to open up, like, the cabinets to see, like, what's inside the cabinets, like, in the kitchen, like, in the morning and the evening. Some bad habit I have.
Well, that's interesting. Now, what are you looking for? Dishes or actual food substances? Or what are you after?
Well, I like to snack at night. I think I mentioned that before. Uh-huh. But I don't know. It's just... it's some weird habit. I just like got to open up everything, every cabinet, just to see what's in there.
Well, you're doing better than most people. Most of us have no idea what's in our cabinets. last month, John brought home some crackers, and he said, "These are new crackers. I thought I'd try them." And I looked at them, and I said, "I think you said that last year." And I opened a cabinet and went behind a few things. I said, "Here they are when you bought them last year. You didn't try them then." So,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, if you put things in the cabinet, I mean, maybe there's nothing wrong with checking every day because I tend to forget what's there.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like just to have a mental health, a mental picture of what's in there. And partly because I have a list that I carry in my pocket, and then I'll just like check off, okay, we need to get this when we leave the house in the morning. So I think that's what that is.
That's tremendously organized.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah, but you know, tomorrow, I was calling Walgreens Records in Chicago because I wasn't sure if I got the shingles shot, and I got a chance to talk to them today, and they said, no, you haven't, because they went back 2 years, because
right.
Here in Tampa, they only go back like 2 years, but over there, I called Chicago, and they went back further, and they said I did not. I had a COVID shot, the COVID vaccine, but not the shingles, so tomorrow I'm going to go and get the shingles shot.
All right.
And there's two of them.
Totally up to you if you want to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah. My mother got the pneumonia and the... Mm-hmm. What was the other one that she got? She got the pneumonia one and... I guess it was shingles, too. And she started getting itchiness on the arm, so I got her that Benadryl cream for the pharmacist, so her arm's much better now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because for years we never heard about it, and then suddenly there's a vaccine, and now shingles always in the news. But as you might remember, I got it about 3 years ago, and it was interesting. I might be the only case of internal shingles. So yes, had them had them in my gastro tract. We'll just put it that way. But I got to tell you, I'm sure that for some people this is a terrible thing to have, but I didn't find it that uncomfortable at all. I mean, I didn't like it, but it wasn't where I was going batty worrying about whether I was itching or burning or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, if you have, especially if you had the, I think it's chicken pox as a kid, then you're carrying that vaccine and it can manifest. And it's up to you if you want to vaccinate or not.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm 54 years old, so I'm getting up there, so I want to make sure.
Like I say, it's a personal choice, and I support anyone making that decision. I absolutely do not support it ever being mandated, but as far as anybody making that decision, you absolutely have the right.
Yeah, I mean, I always say that it would have been more better to have done the thing where check with the primary, because the primary doctor has the file, has your file, personal file on everything.
Sure.
Health-wise, drug-wise.
You should have your own file. You know, here's a guy who's making a list of things to get every morning. You should have your own medical files. And you should add to them regularly. And again, healthcare is ideally a partnership. Your doctor shouldn't order you to do anything. He should advise you to do things, and then it's up to you to decide what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of people abdicate their own responsibility there and say, well, it was recommended, so I did it. No, you need to get involved in your own health care. And then whatever decisions you make, I support them.
Yeah. All right. You got a short show, so I guess I'll let you get on to the next call.
Good to talk to you. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yep. Have a good weekend.
Okay, bye.
Yeah.
All right. So 888-876-5593. Now, about health care, as you'll remember, we heard from Fran and were shocked to find out she had had a heart attack. And then we didn't hear last night, and I worried all night. So, Fran, thank you for calling back. How are you feeling?
Not so great. I'm hoping, though, that I can go home tomorrow. If I can, they're trying to sit me up a little bit. And I got some other, bumps and bruises when I fell, like my shoulders, which were bad in the first place, are really bad now.
Yeah.
And I'm very weak, and my arms are, you know, I try to push myself in a sitting position, and I got to get somebody to help me.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. The one thing I had, they took the balloon thing out.
Right.
That they put in my groin.
Right, the angioplasty, yeah.
And it did some kind of hematoma.
Oh, God.
So they had to press on it for about an hour. And you talk about hurt.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I try to be, you know, cool and adult and everything. The heck with that. I cried my little eyes out.
Absolutely.
Oh, stop. And the guy was really nice.
So, and a hematoma is a form of a blood clot, and unfortunately it's because you're bleeding at the site where the artery was pierced, and it is not uncommon. Now, what is good is apparently, from what you're telling me, is that they were able to correct this so you don't need surgery.
Yeah, they're really, they check it, you know, quite a bit,
right.
And it's getting, you know, it's getting soft.
Good.
Which is good. And one of the nurses said, I heard her say to the other one, I think this is getting bigger. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is all too common, particularly with the legs like that. And so, you know, with a small hematoma, it's going to result, usually resolve on its own. In this case, this was enough that they wanted to exert pressure on it and then, of course, monitor you for signs of complications. And so far, so good. So that's excellent news. But, you know, as bad as it is being there, and believe me, I know your Jell-O Central is horrible, but you want to stay there until you know.
Yeah, and unsweetened at that.
Oh, please. You know, I mean, I'll tell you what. You learn firsthand that in allopathic medicine, they spend 3 minutes on nutrition, and it's proven in every hospital in America. So, you know, that said, you still put up with it if you've got potential complications. Because you know what it's like to try and get somebody to pay attention when you're not in the hospital. So
yeah,
here's what I want to know first. We were talking about was the pain you're feeling in your leg and perhaps in your toes in any way related to what's going on with your heart? What did they say?
They don't see how it is.
Well then, okay, what do they think it is?
I don't know. There's one doctor who did seem to be pretty sharp. She said that, you know, if I was having, because that, you know, my heart was, was blocked.
Right.
You know, it was that it could have been affecting circulation in other parts of my body.
Right.
Which made sense because I couldn't figure out why I was having constipation, pain in my fingers, pain in, you know, other parts of my body that, you know, I didn't do anything to cause the pain to them. And my feet were always cold. No matter, you know, I'd put on 3-4 pairs of socks, my feet would be freezing.
Right.
Sometimes they would swell up.
Yep.
So I think, you know, but you know, I'm going to try to find out as much as I can.
Hopefully.
Some of the things I say, you know, they don't.
Right,
you know.
But hopefully you can walk out of there with recommendations for follow-up of doctors who will look at this. Now, I hope they also, and I'm assuming they did if they were doing leg angioplasty, but peripheral artery disease, and how about your blood flow through your legs and, you know, your pulse pressure and your pedal pressure and all that. You want to know. And they should be looking at that. So before they say go home, they should be able to tell you: Do you have peripheral artery disease? Are you facing facing complications from something? What's going on?
Yeah, I know. I mentioned that to one doctor, and he said, "Just I don't think so." Kind of like that.
Yeah. Well,
not even.
You may not think so, but how do we test for it?
Yeah. I'm thinking, does this guy know what peripheral artery disease is?
Yeah, he's seen the commercials.
You know,
unfortunately, now that they have drugs for it, you see the commercials ad nauseum for it. It's obviously a real thing all the way around, and the fact that you are diabetic, you know, extremity vein issues are part and parcel of what you deal with. So you want to know, is blood flow in any way reduced to your limbs?
Yeah. Oh, and I get to be on blood thinners.
Well, that's good.
Well, that should be fun.
Yeah, that's good and bad. Obviously, the last thing you want to do is form a clot. But of course, when you're on blood thinners, you have other issues as well, including you don't want to bleed. Is the bottom line? So it's, So it's
the way I'm always. I mean, even I get around well, but you know, hey, I'm blind. I crash into a lot of stuff.
Right.
Those are the territory. You know?
I'd be more worried of you bleeding internally than externally. I know exactly what you mean, though. You don't want to split open your skin and then you're bleeding like it's the fountain at the Bellagio. No, I get that.
Right.
I'd want them to I try to pin them to the wall about doing some tests rather than I don't think so.
Yeah. That's hard to do, especially when you're not feeling well.
Oh, tell me about it.
Just do something, make it better, shut up, and go away.
Yeah, no, but believe me, I know that, but, use your inner bitch when you're not feeling well to demand some things. And Gary, I'm sure, is with you. He can step up as well, because this is the ideal time to get some diagnostic tests going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've put up with the food. You put up being prodded every time you even thought about going to sleep. So at the very least, you should walk out of there with test results. Yeah, you
That's
betcha.
Right.
All right. Hang on a minute. Don't go away.
And strawberry.
That would be good.
Jello.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sugar free.
Hang on. Don't go away. All right. That's where we'll pick it up. And there's room for you, too, on WGN Radio.
Don't get around my Jenny. Don't get around my Jenny. Don't get around my Jenny.
Miss the Saturday hop. Heard they crowded the floor. Couldn't bear it without you. Don't get around much anymore. Thought I'd visit the club. Got as far as the door. They'd have asked me about you. Don't get around much anymore. Awfully different without you. Don't get around much anymore.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Those are the Belmonts. So James said he wanted to hear Don't Get Around Much Anymore and left it up to me. Who to choose? I choose the Belmonts. All right. Interestingly, most people think of the Belmonts when they think of Dion and the Belmonts, but there was a lot more to them. In fact, they were around before Dion and after Dion as well. And they got together because at Lori they had a group originally backing up Dion that was, basically whiter than the whitest white boy. And this is just not working. And so the Belmonts picked up that background duty. And did very well, actually, with I Wonder Why and things like that. And they recorded that stuff at Bell Sound. It was just instantly successful and really good. But after a while, what you had was Dion wanting to go in one direction, and actually the direction he wanted to go in wasn't the way he was able to go. He really wanted to do blues and R&B stuff, where the Belmonts wanted to do pop standards, as you hear from Don't Get Around Much Anymore. So they split, and of course Dion wound up ultimately on Columbia doing a lot of pop things, and when something sells, that's what you do. And also it was a point where Dion was already into heroin and some problems. So the Belmont went their own way, and they did a few things, actually, and some of it very poppy, actually, like Come On Little Angel, but no real national hits, even though Murray the K loved them. But they did do Don't Get Around Much Anymore. So there you have it. That was Carlo Mastrangelo on lead, and sadly he's been gone now about a decade. All right, so back to Fran in Austin, and then Debbie wants to chime in here, Fran. So, in fact, hang on a minute. Let me see if I can do this without screwing up famous last words. All right, so we're going to bring Debbie and Raleigh into the conversation. So you got me and you got Fran, Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
And Debbie's not saying anything. This is my fault. I'm sure of it. Let's try it again.
All right. There it is.
There. All right.
There she is. Hey, Debbie.
Yes, you got it. It reminds me of the ACB media calls where you have to unmute. That's another story. But, oh, boy. Okay. I went to something called they do a nerve study. And, of course, it was comped, so I didn't have to pay for it. But I don't have diabetes, but I have numbness in my feet. And I thought, this is crazy, So they did something. First of all, they did something with a device that he had in his hands. and he touched my fingers on the back side of my hand, rather, and then my feet to see if the sensation on my hands was the same as on my feet, and all that checked out. But then he took a photo of my feet, and he said, oh, he was talking about the colors, red, green, and whatever. So he took them on the top and the bottom side, and, you know, it's hard for me to explain what you can't see. But anyway, he was talking about how that they can do something with light therapy. I don't know what it's called, but it's some kind of device they let you take home with you. Of course, I can't afford it right now because it's $200 a month. So I knew that wasn't going to go anywhere. But and he was talking about mitochondria, which is, I guess that's something to do with blood flow from your nerves. He said it can even travel from your head down to your feet as far as, you know, related to circulation. And I wish I'd taken notes, but I wonder if somebody out there knows anything about all that. But the site was called Peak Medical, and it's in a nearby city here.
Okay. Interestingly, you know, I mentioned peripheral artery disease. There's also peripheral vascular disease, and in fact, heart attack can be a symptom of that. But what I don't understand is why they're not doing things like an ABI test, where they're comparing the blood pressure in the ankles and the arms, or imaging tests, ultrasound, CTs, you know, visualizing the blood vessels. If they thought enough that they wanted to do a balloon angioplasty, they think there's some blockage. Why don't they follow through and find out?
Yeah, because I was having like tingling, and it felt like I was wearing socks, even though I wasn't.
Right.
And it doesn't hurt, really. My feet get cold, but there's no real major pain. But it feels like my toes are cramping up, you know. It's just the weirdest thing I've ever gone through. And, you know, they want to tell you it's diabetes. I said, no, it isn't that, because my A1C is below 6.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well,
that helps. I don't know if it will.
It's interesting. All information is good information. Thanks, Debbie. Appreciate it.
And let me tell you one real quick thing. Okay, there's a thing called rock and roll musician Grayson Hugh, and they use AI on that back and forth between him and an AI person. So, if y'all want something interesting to do, and I hadn't thought of Grayson Hewitt forever, but a friend of mine was talking about him one day and everything. So, anyway, I love your show as always, and even when I sleep through it, I go back and listen to the replay of it.
Terrific. Good to hear from you.
You get better soon.
Yes. All right, Debbie, thank you.
All right, y'all. Take care.
So, yeah, friend, I'm just, the more I think about it, I'm absolutely speechless that they won't do basic testing to find out what's going on.
And, you know, I mean, it seems like I'm being tested for everything. And so I was thinking, well, okay, but, you know, I'm still having the same thing if I say, you know, did you test for this? You know, whatever. Or if I say anything about my toes or my knees, you know, they want to discuss my heart, which is fine.
Right.
I am very concerned about that. But
yeah, I'd say, well, fine. Yeah, say, related to that, I want to know about peripheral vascular disease and peripheral artery disease. I'd like some imaging done. You know, I mean, it's crazy to me that they're not doing this. And I know you're on Medicaid, and I half wonder, is it just they don't want to spend for the tests?
They might be, well, one thing I found out, this company that I was telling you about that they want, that, it's an insurance company, WellMed.
Yeah. That's basically managing it.
They're the Medicaid vendor for Austin. And, you know, so I don't know. And they apparently, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard some places that are upset with them because they don't pay their stuff.
Well,
so,
by the way,
they were trying to get rid of WellMed. They haven't been able to do it yet.
But. Yeah. Ultimately, they'll have to pay the stuff, but whatever is accounting for it, it seems like there's something stopping them from doing basic tests. Now, Bruce from Elwood is calling, saying something that I should have thought of a while ago. Most hospitals have a patient advocate. Ask for that person.
Oh, okay.
You know, and let them know that, hey, you know, I want to know if I have any type of peripheral disease here, artery or venous here. I want, you know, vascular. I want to know the whole deal here on what the deal is, because I've got too many symptoms and I'm being ignored.
Yeah.
You know, it may maybe that they're, you know, if they're saying, well, you know, the symptoms really don't qualify us doing this test. No, I'm sorry. If they're doing balloon angioplasty on your legs, the symptom absolutely qualifies.
Oh, yeah, because there was definitely some blockage. In, I don't know how many veins, but there were some, you know, some blockage.
Right. And you don't know if it goes down to your feet. You don't. And you want to.
Yeah. And now, you know. I've got a stent or whatever in my heart, so it's no longer like a nothing thing.
Yeah,
and I've got to rethink some things, and that's another thing. Like, I've had diabetes for quite a while.
Sure.
And I've had high blood pressure for quite a while.
Sure.
And I, like I've heard you say many times that you do. You eat like a 9-year-old whose parents are away for the weekend.
That's correct. That's my diet.
Yeah, and that's pretty much mine. And,
You want to rethink that.
Changes over the years, and I'll do really great for like 3 months. And then it's like, I cannot stand this diabetic diet anymore. I'm always hungry.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, very often the diet they want to give you from the ADA is about the worst thing you can eat. You kind of have to really fend for yourself in determining what works and what doesn't work. Now, see, I can get away with eating like a 9-year-old because the only metric of my body that's good, there's only one, I have great blood sugar levels. That's it. Everything else, just terrible. But man, that blood sugar, you know, 78 every day, doesn't matter what I eat, you know.
So wow.
You have to have something good, and that's my only good thing. So therefore, I eat like a 9-year-old. Everything else, you know, like when I do a liver test, they always say, well, for a heavy drinker, yeah, I've yet to have a drink. Or, you know, some of the imaging tests for lungs and stuff. Well, for a former heavy smoker, I've yet to have a cigarette, you know. So all that's terrible. But, man, that blood sugar, I can eat like a 9-year-old.
Yeah. I used to, I would take it seriously for a little while and then, I wouldn't take it seriously anymore, but I didn't have any symptoms.
Right. Oh, God, yes, exactly. But the other thing...
I was fine, you know.
The other thing is...
Yeah, I'm diabetic, and yeah, I'm, you know, whatever, but I'm fine. I didn't have any...
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
And so,
but now, I'm kind of scared because I can't keep doing what I've been doing.
But what you need to do when you decide on what you're going to eat and how you're going to do it is realize that this is not about a quick fix in a couple weeks. This has to be something you can live with. And so there are trade-offs you have to make, because if you just become so lean and clean that everything's perfect, that's fine for a month, and then you eat an entire 2 key lime pies. You know, you just...
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No one can do that. So you have to work it out so that whatever you're doing is sustainable, you know, and you go through it and you make your choices, and you start to learn also that it's not just about sugar content. It's what goes along with it. Like the deadly cocktail is if it's fat and sugar together. Oh my God, don't eat that donut. You know, things like that.
Oh my God, I love donuts.
Yeah, well, you don't, the fat and sugar together are an e-ticket to high blood levels. So you want, I'm sorry, but it's true. You want to get into that. And also, everybody is different. You'll find out if you really watch it quickly what your spikes are. What does it?
Yeah, I have to learn. Oh, that was another thing. I've never taken my sugar.
What?
I've never. I don't even know.
What?
You know, I mean, they tell me what my sugar. No, I've never done it. I don't know how. has ever suggested that I do that.
Oh, God. It's very simple. And, yeah, you should do that every morning. And actually, you should do it more than every morning. But you want a baseline in the morning. And then you should do it after a meal, a half hour, an hour, 2 hours, to see when you're leveling off and all that stuff. But, yeah, I can't believe that they're not prescribing at least that. And
yeah, they gave me things like Januvia, Nalman Farsiga. I don't know what they're going to change me to here.
Well,
they might.
They should prescribe a meter. Freestyle is pretty good as far as that goes, and Freestyle Libre, if you could have that. But you're not insulin dependent, so they won't qualify you for that. But Freestyle is pretty good.
What? I'm not into it. What?
You're not insulin.
I'm not insulin dependent.
You're not insulin.
Oh, insulin dependent. You know what? You can laugh at this one. I thought you said you are not into independent.
No. Insulin.
Raleigh, who do you think you're talking to?
Yeah, really, no. Insulin dependent. See, that's a marker where...
I got it now, but I thought that was funny.
No. If you were insulin dependent, they could give you something that would, like the Freestyle Libre, that you just wear on your arm and it would do it for you. But they won't qualify you for that if you're not insulin dependent. But they certainly will qualify you for a meter, and which is fairly cheap. The expensive part of this little project is the strips. And but they'll pay for the strips. They'll give you all the strips, at least to test it once a day, which you should. And then there's a variety of Lansing devices. And I've got one that you just cannot feel. You just cannot. And I've tried to get John to try it, and he doesn't. But there's a variety out there, so you can find a Lansing device you can live with, and it's fairly easy to do.
Yeah, just going to find, I don't want one of those Libre things, because I have a friend who's got one, and he'll be in the middle of doing something, and all of a sudden his Libre starts, and it does it too much.
You don't have to set the alarms, but you can sign up to. Hang on a minute, don't go away, and we'll pick it up after this on WGN Radio.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA, then everybody be served like California, you'd see them wearing their baggies, Huarache sandals too, a bushy, bushy blonde hairdo, serving USA. You'll catch them serving at the
inside, outside USA,
Ventura County line,
inside, outside USA,
Santa Cruz and
inside, outside USA,
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. The Beach Boys, of course, and we did a lot with the Beach Boys last night talking about Brian Wilson, but I had it on a pad. I found it today saying Surfing USA, and I remembered, I think it was David who requested that, and I promised I'd play it last night, and well, 24 hours later, I did. Sorry about that, and I've got the rest of your requests to play next hour, including Tubby's requests for Laura Nero, and, of course, Naoto's Yellow Magic Orchestra. So we're talking to Fran, and Fran, I'm going to bring Bruce on here for a moment. He's if he's still with us, because he mentioned the patient advocate. So, Bruce, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here, Raleigh.
Okay, so here's Fran in the hospital. How should she go about asking?
Well, I don't know how it is in Texas, but in Illinois, I've been in the hospital, like 10 times with these bowel resections and stuff. And the one time they tried to send me home alone, I live alone, they tried to send me home and I couldn't walk.
Yeah, and I remember that.
They have here, the lady should have come in and talked to you, like, when you come in here, go in there. It's called a patient advocate up here.
Yeah, it is in most states.
You need to not go home, Fran, until they got this straightened out.
I agree.
I know you just want to get out of there. I want to go home. I want to go home.
I do. I want to go sleep in my own bed.
Yeah, I know you do. But once you get out of there, you may not have the clout to get what you need.
Big time.
Yeah, that's it. I'm up against the news, Bruce, and thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah, just tell her to get a hold of that patient advocate. Yeah. They'll coordinate everything.
Yeah, good deal. Yes, great suggestion. Thank you. All right, it is a great suggestion, Fran. Yeah, and I want you to keep us posted. And do you have access to email? Can you let me know how you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, keep me informed. I want you to get these tests before you leave. Oh.
Okay.
Oh, so and John just came in and turned off the light, so I guess I'd better stop talking. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Hey, that wouldn't work for me. He can turn off the light for me, and I wouldn't even care.
Well, that's right. You would. And, you know, by the way, we're in the news now, so I can talk a few minutes because it's not on WGN. But that was one of my things years ago. Like, I'd visit my friend Tandy or whatever, and after a while I'd say, Tandy, can I turn on the lights? You know, because it wouldn't even occur to him that, you know, I could see, and I wasn't that happy sitting in the dark. So he said, well, sure, if you want, you know, it won't matter. Well, it will to me. So.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny. I try to remember to put lights on for people who are coming over, but a lot of times I forget.
Well, sure. Because why shouldn't you?
I remember one time, when I got my first apartment, about 18 years old, this friend of mine was going to come visit me, and she never showed up. I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I asked her, hey, I thought you were coming over last night. And she said, well, I drove past your house and your lights weren't on, so I thought you were asleep.
Oh, God.
And I said, Tina, who do you think you're talking to?
Right, exactly. That's the time you say, Tina, you're an idiot. Oh, that's great.
I will check
email regularly, and I really pray to God you can get these tests before you leave, because I'm real afraid that you won't once you're out of there.
Yeah, that's a possibility, although I just want to get out of here so bad.
Oh, I know, but don't waste this opportunity. Go for it.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
All right. Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
Good deal. All right, so, WGN's into commercials and the news, as they should be, and we'll be back after it, and we've got Jim in Richmond and Gail in Michigan, a Ginger Rogers story. All right, all that and more coming up on WGN.
Stand up, please.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yellow Magic Orchestra. I mentioned that last night when I was talking to Naoto. I don't know if it was a hit in Japan, but it certainly was a quasi-hit here. Dr. Nomeno really took after it. But in 1980, A&M put it out. And actually, Yellow Magic Orchestra was instrumental, no pun intended, when it came to the entire electropop boom. They were pioneers in synthesizers and samplers and sequencers and drum machines and computers and all that. They truly influenced pretty much everything that we heard here. They also, during their career, explored some subversive socio-political themes, which we won't mention any of those. But they were three guys who were veterans of the music industry, and they came together as YMO, and that was a Yellow Magic Orchestra, and inspired by, for instance, Kraftwerk, which was into that earlier, and things like that, as well as arcade games, Japanese traditional music, funk music, and Giorgio Moroder. Okay, well, there's a group. And they had a hit in 1978, Computer Game. It was a top 20 UK record, got, I think, no stateside sales whatsoever. But it was the band was often accompanied by a computer programmer, and it was in their gigs and stuff like that. It was a number of things. They united several times. Sadly, a couple of them died in the last couple of years, and that pretty much was it for YMO. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. And we have Gail in Michigan. What's up, Gail?
Hello, I'm back.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to tell you this. Well, I have a lot of stories from my life. Okay, a lot of stories. I majored in theater, so I knew a lot of people. And right after I graduated, I must have been 22, 23, they opened the Drury Lane East Theater, which was at McCormick Place. Now, the opener was Ginger Rogers.
All right.
So I get this call. Ginger is having a little trouble learning her lines. Well, they said, could you go up to the Ambassador East penthouse every night this week and go over lines with her because she's not making it. And I thought she was so old then.
Well, she was born in 1911, so about what year would this have been?
Oh, God, 1973.
Okay, well, so in 73, she's only 62 years old. But yes, I know to you, that's
it sounds so old now,
Right. But, I mean, you'd think at 62, she was pretty much on it, so she wasn't, so you get
well,
there.
Well, let me tell you, when she opened the door, I thought I was gonna drop dead. Here's the thing. My mother loved Ginger Rogers.
Sure.
Just loved Ginger Rogers. So I thought, well, maybe if I take this job, I'll be able to introduce her to my mother.
Right.
Plus, I knew that she knew Fred Astaire and George Gershwin,
uh-huh,
who was my idol.
Okay.
I mean, she introduced that song, "They're writing songs of love, but not for me." She introduced that on Broadway when she was 17 years old.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible. So I went there every night, and it wasn't getting any better.
Oh.
I mean, every night I'd go through the line. And every night she'd forget them.
On stage.
Well, she forgot them in the penthouse.
Okay.
And I'm sitting in the front row with my mother on opening night. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, please don't blow your lines. So things were going okay, you know. She seemed to be doing okay. And then she just went off.
Oh, no.
And she was saying things that had nothing to do with the story.
Right.
I mean, it was just the other actors were like in shock.
Right.
They didn't know what to do.
Right.
So anyway, when she came out, though, she struck a pose and she held it for like 15 minutes. She was a big star. She was a big star.
Oh, yeah.
She was the sweetest woman I have ever met. Meanwhile, I had a boy waiting for me in the lobby to pick me up.
Right.
Well, it's getting to be like 2 in the morning. You know, I said, you know, I got this boy waiting for me in the basement. She said, oh, forget about him. Don't worry about him.
Oh, my God.
I said, well, he threatened to jump out the window if I didn't come down. Because they still had phones then.
But he's in the basement. Yeah. How high could he jump?
So she said, oh, please. She said, I had a man offer to do that once. He offered to jump off the Michigan Avenue Bridge. And I said, well, what did you do? And she said, I just went over and opened the window. She was incredible. Here's what I want to know,
because you sort of glossed over this. So here she is on stage. She's completely screwed up the line. She's not saying anything she should. How did the other actors cover for this?
They were in shock.
Yeah, well, they couldn't stay in shock on stage. What'd they do?
Well, they kind of made stuff up. They did whatever they could. It was terrible. It was terrible. And my mother was sitting there. And I was like going, oh, please, please, you know, get back on your lines. Well, okay. All right, so they get through the show. She gets a standing ovation.
Good.
The reviews said things like, we have never seen such poise in our life. She was magnificent. She couldn't have been better.
So you had to think to yourself, was I in the wrong place? Where did this come from?
Unbelievable. And it said the rest of the actors seemed kind of wooden, however.
Oh, yeah, they were in shock.
Wooden.
Yeah, like I said.
Wooden, they were in shock.
Yeah, right, exactly.
They didn't know what to do.
That's so funny.
So anyway, after the show, I'm out in the lobby with Ginger, and I introduced her to my mother. And I was really cute, okay? I have to say. I was.
I don't doubt it for a minute.
I was a young girl. I was very cute. She said, oh, Mrs. Isaacson, if any of my 35 husbands would have yielded a child, I would want a daughter just like yours. And my mother is like platzing, you know. She was like, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. She wrote me a beautiful handwritten letter. You know, that's class.
That's,
you know,
great.
Thanking me for everything. Guess what? I lost it.
Oh, of course.
I have no idea where it is.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
But I have a million stories like that. And
well,
my mother got to meet Ginger Rogers. And I asked Ginger about George Gershwin,
yeah.
who I was in love with.
Uh-huh.
I was in love with him, except that he was a little bit older than me.
Yes, absolutely.
So I said, you know, what was George Gershwin like? And she said, he was the nicest man. He was the most well-dressed man. He played the piano like nobody in this world. You know, it was just like I got to learn all about George Gershwin.
Yeah.
From Ginger Rogers. It was just one of the great experiences of my life.
It's a wonderful
story. And that's a true story.
It's a wonderful story. So what I want you to do is call in regularly with more stories because I want to hear them.
Well, what happened to Kuklin Alley?
Yeah, I know this is terrible, and this is my fault. We've had some things that I can't talk about on the air, some things that have come up here that I had to, you know, emergencies that have to be dealt with. And so
I understand.
So I've got them, and I carry my computer with me, and hopefully, if not tomorrow, then Saturday, I'll be able to hear it. But it's with me everywhere I go. So I will hear it, and I will let you know what I think, and I will hopefully hear from you soon. All right, Gail, thank you.
I would never, never be mad at you because I adore you.
Well, thank you, thank you. Well, I'm looking forward to your next call. That was a great Ginger Rogers story. Thank you.
Okay, right, thank you.
So, yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, I know. You read the reviews, and then it's like, where was I? How did that happen? 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. We'll get to Jim in Richmond. We've got Laura in Willowbrook and Carl in Riverside coming up on WGN Radio.
Yes, I'm ready. Meet the captain at the dead end zone. What devil does he know is the devil can't stay. He doesn't know he's seen his day. Oh, luck is taking over and his clover shows. Devil can't get out of hand cause luck is taking over and what lucky says goes. Dig them potatoes if you never dug your girl before.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Laura Nero, Lucky, and that's from Eli and the 13th Confession, which Columbia released in 1968 and was just a swell album. All right, so we got Jim in Richmond here with an update on his sister. So how's she doing, Jim?
There's great news and then there's some weird news. And what Fran was going through, talking about an advocate.
Yes.
My sister kept everything to herself.
Right.
And when you can't communicate to anybody, my brother was going nuts trying to figure all these things out.
Yeah.
It turns out that the hospital has a social worker. And the social worker found out that she had an advantage plan to her Medicare.
Now, was it an advantage? Wait a minute. Was it an advantage? Last night you thought it might be a Medigap plan. They are different.
No, it wasn't. I never mentioned Medigap.
Okay, so it was an advantage? All right, well.
An advantage plan. But she never told anybody, you know.
Right, but they found it.
They found it and found out that she is available for 6 weeks of physical therapy on the sixth floor of the hospital.
Okay.
And a bunch of other things. So I want to mention to everybody, I live alone, but I have my friend. She knows everything. She knows where the paperwork for my life insurance is. She knows where my will is and everything.
Yeah.
But
We talked about that last night, that it's important that everybody have something written down somewhere,
right,
where it can be found. Absolutely.
Right. And then, okay, my brother said yesterday he didn't even think she was going to make it through the night. And then I told you they gave her plasma.
Yes.
And something to coagulate her blood.
Right.
And then something else. And then I got a text from my brother today that she was up and walking around.
Good.
And which was great, but that was with the physical therapy people and all that stuff. And what they're worried about now is her liver. And my brother is worried because she can't live without a liver.
Well, yeah, but there's a lot can be done with that, including,
right,
even transplants, even at her advanced age. But, you know, the liver can go south for a lot of reasons, particularly with drugs that have been administered and things like that. And the liver can regenerate. Hold on a minute. Don't go away. We'll talk about that after the news. Yeah, so it's not necessarily the end of the world, but you certainly want to watch it. So we'll get back to Jim. We got Carl in Riverside and Laura, her auditions. All right, and Chris in Greenwood. And you two on WGN Radio.
Hands off the man, flim flam man. His mind is up his sleeve, and his talk is a make believe. Oh!
WGN Radio, I'm Holly James, and that's Laura Nero, Flim Flam Man, early for her in 1967 on Verve. That's such a great song, even the version by Barbara Streisand couldn't ruin it. So, back to Jim in Richmond, and okay, what's next?
They said today they were, you know, what, you haven't heard of flushing the liver?
Yeah, sure. We talked about that last night.
Right. Well, that's what they did.
Okay.
And now, today, they were flushing her kidneys.
Okay.
So now they're looking into her kidneys.
Uh-huh.
Because they're still trying to find out where she's bleeding from.
Right. And that's important.
Right. But my brother said they have been giving her blood thinners before.
Right.
And they think that that caused, you know,
a bleed.
Her bleeding.
Right. Can
and
happen.
That's why they gave her the stuff that they gave her,
right,
yesterday, and then I only hear bits and pieces,
right,
because,
yeah,
I would love to get in the car and drive down there, but, you know,
right,
my
so,
situation.
So she's still in the critical part of the hospital. She hasn't moved yet to a therapeutic wing where she'll get some physical therapy. Is that what's going on?
Well, no, she's been getting physical therapy.
Well, yeah, in the hospital, but I mean, there's a difference, right, between, hospital care and then when you get therapeutic care.
Right, but she's not in ICU. The
no,
ICU
of course
people
not.
Came down to look at her,
yeah,
and said, oh, she's doing fine. She's,
yeah,
not a candidate,
right,
for that. And
right,
then they're going to try to get her up to the sixth floor
right.
to have that therapy. 3-hour mm-hmm. physical therapy.
Well, good.
And then I have a last question. Are you going to play Charlie Brown for me?
Sure. I'll play it for you next.
Oh, because it was on, I asked about 2 days
yeah.
ago for
well,
that.
Well, hey, there are people who asked 2 weeks ago, Jim. You understand that.
Right. I understand right. that. I wasn't, yeah. I
so,
wasn't.
Yeah, yeah
you know,
we'll get it on for you next.
I wasn't busting your chops.
Yeah, we'll get it on for you next.
Right. I just okay. want you to know I listen every night.
All so. Right. Good to have you, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good weekend.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
You have a wonderful weekend.
All right. So, yeah, we will play Charlie Brown next, and I still got a couple other requests to play, but you know there's always next week, so it doesn't always happen automatically, as it were. All right, so I want to hear about these auditions, Laura, in Willowbrook.
Oh, my gosh, Raleigh. 2 nights of exciting fun.
Oh, I'll bet. Tell me about it.
This is the first time I've done this with this group, so like, oh my goodness. So, 8 directors sitting at the table, and every half hour, 6 auditionees.
Okay, all right.
So, it's like 3 hours of auditions. Every half hour, you got 6 more people.
Right.
So, you got to take your notes and blah, 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 blah. First, they do generic scenes, which is like, hey, how you doing? Happy birthday, whatever.
Right.
Then, you're allowed to... Does anybody want to have them do something from their show? I'm like, oh, heck yeah, me. So you tell them, well, you want this and you want that. It's like, oh, okay, that's good. And then you switch them up. It's like, okay, you do it with you. And then, like, okay. So then they said, okay, now after the audition, they said, now tomorrow night the decisions are going to be made. So not only did you have 1 day of auditions, but you had the second day audition, okay? So they're like, okay, well, make a list of who you would like from the first group. So the next night, same thing. They get up there. We had over 50 people in 2 days.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to choose 3 people from these 50 people, okay? But also the other directors get to choose their people.
Right.
So we all have to choose from the same pool.
Right.
Okay. So I'm like, well, okay, I know who was good yesterday, but now I saw this one today. How the heck am I supposed to pick from the 20 people I saw yesterday? And like, I thought I decided, but now there's more good people. Like, I didn't realize it would be so hard. Like, oh my gosh. So then, okay, everybody's been seen. Now comes the decision process. Okay. Round robin. Okay, first person, who do you want? Well, I want these 3 people. Anybody else want these 3 people? No? Okay, you get them. Okay, it comes to me. I got my first 2 choices.
Good.
The third, and I was happy because one was, I got the leading lady. I got her, like, oh, good. And then my leading man, I got him.
Okay.
The third guy, doesn't have as many lines, but he's still, they're all important characters. So I said, well, I'd like Jake, or I'd like Tom, whoever it was. Oh, well, does anybody else want Tom? Yes, I would like Tom. I thought, oh, shoot.
Right.
So like, now what? So they said, well, okay, Laura, how big of a part is this person supposed to play? I said, well, it's a big part, but he doesn't have a lot of lines. I mean, he doesn't talk often, but what he does is like a major line and big. So they asked the other person, well, how big is their part? Oh, well, their part's really big. So they got my guy because
yeah, right.
they would rather have, obviously the guy would rather have a big part than a
sure.
smaller part if he
sure.
had a choice.
Right.
So then I had to go, oh my gosh, now I got to think of all these other 20 people, who the heck am I supposed
right.
to pick? But I did get my second pick of this person.
Good.
So then I'm like, okay, now you have to send them a letter letting them know, hey, you're in cast. Would you like the role? Would this play work for you? And would you like to be in it? So I had to send them all a copy of the play, and they all took them.
All right.
Everybody accepted my shows. And the one lady, she was like just jumping for joy because she's got like a ton of lines. So, and she was so good, and she was my first choice. So I'm like, okay, so I got it. And she's just, like, so excited. And, of course, who wouldn't like, you know, a lot of lines, you know what I'm saying?
Well, good. This is excellent. So now, now you're going to direct this?
Yes. So then they're like, okay, here's their resume. You got to figure out, okay, who's available when.
Oh.
And then you have to negotiate trying to figure out what rehearsal dates are open.
Right.
And, like, this date's a bunch of people had already picked rehearsal dates. I'm like, I didn't know that was coming so fast.
Right.
So, like, I had not as many rehearsal dates to choose from. But thank goodness the people that I chose, the leading lady, she's always available, she says.
Okay.
She says, like, she has no conflicts. I'm like, okay, thank you. We can work with that.
Right.
So I sent them a possible schedule, but I was shocked as heck. I looked and I says, nobody has a conflict on Father's Day. So my first rehearsal is Father's Day.
All right. Good.
They're all free.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what that says, but good.
I know. It's like, okay, that's weird, I think.
Yeah, but who cares? Go with it. Oh, that's great. Yeah, oh, good. So, well, I can't wait to hear about the first rehearsal.
Yeah, I'll update you about that, but it was a blast, Raleigh.
Good. That's excellent. I can't wait to hear about the follow-up.
Yeah. And thanks for all your suggestions.
Oh,
have a good day, all right?
All right, take good care. Deal. Okay, bye. All right, so good. Nice when things work out. All right, okay, Naoto was calling, and he heard a song. All right, so Naoto, had you ever heard it before?
I don't think so. So thank you for playing the song.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a great song, and they were a pretty good group there for a while.
Yeah, I did some web search on that, and I found out they had some hits, you know?
Yes, absolutely they had hits. You betcha.
Yeah,
and they were real forerunners. Yeah.
So it's always nice to know new things. You know, I always learn something new when I listen to your show. So
Well, good. Well, great to hear from you, and I will talk to you Monday night for trivia.
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Oh, good. So I'm glad Naoto got to hear it. I always thought the Yellow Magic Orchestra was just a terrific group. And of course, worldwide, they had their recognition. But stateside, unless you listen to Dr. DeMenro, it was kind of like, who? Carl in Riverside, welcome to WGN Radio.
Raleigh, is it me, or have I crossed over into the twilight zone?
Oh, absolutely, you have.
Domo arigato, Mr. Abato.
Yeah.
I had to do that.
Okay.
Anyway, hey, Raleigh, I think I forgot to ask you a couple questions last week. Is Mary Hopkins still alive?
Yes, as far as I know. Let me look, though.
Okay.
She was not old, actually. She was quite young when she did that song. She was born in 1950. And as far as I know, she absolutely is still with us. She and Tony divorced about 45 years ago, but she's still around.
I heard this, you know, I still like that. Those Were the Days, My Friends,
yep.
Or whatever the name of it is.
That's what it was, and a lot of people were amazed when she did it that somebody so young could sound so emotive about it.
I think I read that that song has its roots in a kind of a Russian folk song.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, you get back to me on that.
Yeah, well, I never liked the damn thing, but... what can I tell you? But the deal is, it was a Russian song, period. Not that it had roots in it, but it was a Russian song. And Mary Hopkin was Welsh, and Paul McCartney produced it.
Knowing you, you're probably right, and I'm wrong.
Well, no, I mean, I'm pretty sure that this was. A long time ago, you know, I'm talking like 1920s, this was a Russian song.
Could be.
I'm looking it up while we speak. Okay, I'm right about that, but here's something. The song appears in the 1953 French movie Innocence in Paris, sung with the original Russian lyrics by the Russian chanteuse Ludmila Lopato. Okay. So let's hear one for Ludmilla. I guess you could look it up. And I think Gene Raskin wrote the lyrics that Mary Hopkin sang. But so...
Da or Nyet.
Right, yeah. So there you have it. It's interesting because the song was around, and I know Connie Francis did it on Ed Sullivan, but I think that was after Mary Hopkin. It was painful. But
and Mary Hopkins did it on Ed Sullivan.
Well, yeah, of course, didn't everybody, right? So, and like I say, McCartney produced it, and it went to number one on the UK charts, and... It was number two for 3 weeks while Hey Jude was number one, and then it got to number one. So it was the deal there. I don't know if it ever was number one in America, but anyway, yeah. So that was it, and she made a career of it actually. As far as that goes, she released her last album like last year.
Molly Kazowie.
Yeah, so but I say she's born in 1950, so she's only about 70, you know, obviously 74 years old. She'll be 75 later this year.
I cannot relate to that year at all.
1950?
I'm being facetious.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, right.
If you know what I mean.
Yes, absolutely. So, you betcha. So she's still with us and still singing. Which is interesting.
Okay, how about Skeeter Davis?
Oh, she's no longer with us. Skeeter is long gone, and over 20 years now. And, she was just interesting. Started out the Davis sisters. It wasn't her sister, but the deal was the sister got killed in a car wreck, and then Skeeter had to go it alone. She had a very tough childhood. Her mother was depressed and had lots of suicide, attempts, and basically she had to grow up fast and kind of be the caregiver of that. And her name was Pennock. But they moved to Cincinnati in the 30s, which was great. As far as that goes, outside of Cincinnati, because of course there was, you know, the WLW hayride and all that that kind of stuff. But like I say, she met Betty Jack Davis, and they became the Davis sisters. Like I say, they weren't sisters, but she got killed, and then Skeeter went to Nashville and did very well initially by the late 50s, because she was no spring chicken. You know, she was born in 1931, so she wasn't exactly a teen, and she was married in the 50s, and she had depressive issues as well, especially from Betty Jack's death and all that. And she tore, you know, as an opening act with people like Ernest Tubb and all that. But she co-wrote a song that Chet Atkins produced that earned her a Grammy Award for Best Country Recording, and it's not a song you usually think of her, Set Him Free. And then, meanwhile, she gets divorced and is working. First thing she did was she did an answer record to Hank Locklin's Geisha Girl, Lost to a Geisha Girl, and that didn't, but, you know, Grand Ole Opry appearances and things like
well,
that.
Well, no wonder she sang, what was the name of it?
End of the World.
End
of the World, right. Yeah.
What a downer song. But
Don't
good.
Say No, It's the End of the World. And that was her biggest hit in 1963. And it was number one on the Adult Contemporary charts. It actually charted R&B as well. One of the few performers, white performers, to have a top 10 R&B hit. And it did. And it was like her signature song. But she had one other big pop song in 63 that it was a Jerry Goff and Carole King song, I Can't Stay Mad at You. Which was, shooby dooby dooby, down down dee dooby dooby, I Can't Stay Mad at You. I always liked her version of Gonna Get Along Without You Now. Horrible to admit, but true. She and Bobby Bear did A Dear John Letter. Anyway, she winds up marrying Ralph Emery. This was a marriage made in hell all the way around. And Ralph was a big deal in Nashville. He was originally a disc jockey on WMAK, but then he had a TV show and all this kind of stuff. And her first husband had long been divorced from that. So 1960, she marries Ralph, and like I say, marriage made in hell all the way around. And they divorced, and then she married. Now this is interesting. A lot of people don't know that she married the guy who played bass for NRBQ, Joey Spampinato, and but that was later. Anyway, she had this thing on the Grand Ole Opry. They kicked her off of the Grand Ole Opry. And this was a very big thing, and it had to do with she was supporting a group that had been protesting, a Christian group that had been protesting, and she, you know, she went on the Grand Ole Opry and talked about it, and of course they didn't like that very well, and so they suspended her from the Grand Ole Opry for a while. She was really, really kind of hellfire, but she wound up back on the Grand Ole Opry, and in fact, I think that she sang End of the World right before she died. She had breast cancer, and it had mm-hmm. metastasized, and she died. She's about 72, maybe. But, yeah, end of Lou Reed says End of the World was a great influence on him, which I think hilarious, but okay. Bob Dylan recorded I Forgot More Than You'll Ever Know, which I think had the Davis Sisters arrangements on it. So that was kind of nice. But she got a couple BMI awards for songwriting, you know, meaning you had to sell a lot of records for that and all of that. But the two big hits were End of the World and Can't Stay Mad at You.
I almost called you Laurie. I don't know why. Riley, you played Flim Flam. Was that the song from the movie track that you played?
No, I played it from the Verve 45.
Okay. Same song, but... Yeah, whatever, right?
Verve Records, 1967. It's 45.
George C. Scott was the Flim Flam man.
Okay, well, I see. There you go. I have no idea about this. Like I say, I know that in the early 70s, Barbra Streisand covered it, and I thought, man, that song is so good, even Barbra Streisand can't ruin it. But yeah, I when it comes to movies, now you got to talk to somebody else because I just don't see them.
That I think I know. Okay, last but not least, because you got a few minutes yet. By the next time I talk to you, I think we should know the verdict, if you know.
Oh, right? Yes, next week we'll go to Boston together and talk about that.
I think that they're going to wrap up closing tomorrow and maybe a verdict by Monday.
Well, tomorrow, you know, is Friday the 13th. Anything could happen.
Yes.
All right. Well, we will reconvene on her next week.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Well, young lady, hey, I didn't mean to take up that much of your time, but I really...
Glad you did.
I love listening to all your information, your wealth of knowledge. Anyway, young lady, have a good weekend, okay?
You too. All right, good deal. Yeah, I'll have to get more on that Grand Ole Opry thing. Oh, man, that was a big scandal in Nashville, but ultimately they let her back on. Not for a while, though. All right, so I'm not sure, but I think I got to do something right now on WGN Radio. WGN, I'm Raleigh James, and we have less than a minute left, so apologies to Ruth and Chris and Karen, but that's why we're here next week. Our next live show is Monday Night Trivia, and looking tomorrow, of course, is a replay. Don't call, listen, but call on Monday, and then Tuesday through Thursday, we can talk about whatever's on your mind. All right, so in the waning seconds, looked up that deal with Skeeter Davis, and now that I saw this, I remember it so well. There were 11 preachers who were doing a protest at 100 Oaks Mall and in Nashville, and Skeeter Davis came on the Grand Ole Opry, and she criticized the Nashville police for arresting them and dedicated a song to the 11 preachers. And they said, "You're suspended." And took about a year for them to say, "All right, maybe not." So she was back. All right. So on that note, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air. Couldn't do it without him. We thank John for screening your calls. I know I couldn't do it without him. But, hey, I'd hate to do it without you. So thanks to those of you who called. We'll reconvene Monday. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.